This is Greg Fennell, and you're listening to the Dope Science Show. Keep it locked in.
Hello, welcome to the Dope Science Show. Stephanie Lowe, a.k.a. Science Steph with Steph. Thank you for your ears and minds. I hope that the show sparks new ideas, new opportunities, and conversations. I want us to learn and grow. We are all curious, innovative, and experimental in our daily lives. We are all dope scientists. Hello, thank you all for listening and showing me so much love. The retweets, the shout-outs, sharing has me feeling so empowered, like I'm really doing something over here. I am part of a podcast community, and I want to thank these podcasts that are always sharing what I'm doing and helping more people find me, and I suggest that you check them out as well. So I'm going to list them so you guys can check them out. Thank you, guys. The John Effect Podcast, hashtag Blackout Podcast, The Second Shift Podcast, Just Say Words Podcast, Slaying the Scene Podcast, Always Right Podcast, The Blurred Girl, Off the Clock Podcast, The Brotherly Love Podcast, and there's so many more. I need to get a better list, so I have not forgotten you. I will add you. I will comb through my retweets to find you guys. There's also some fans that are always giving me shout outs. Justin, the podcast groupie, the Outspoken Diva, Brother Romy. Those are some really, really loyal listeners, and I appreciate you guys. And if you guys want me to talk about, say, an article you found online, shoot me an email. Email me at thedopescienceshow@gmail.com and I'll check it out and probably read it on the show. Why not? To spread the knowledge and the thoughts and conversation. On this episode, I share a conversation with my friend, Space Monk. He's a creative based out of LA. He's a singer, a rapper, writer, and an open soul. We talk about masculinity, believing in ourselves, overcoming our fears, and we speculate about science. It was super fun. I recorded this in December on a sunny day during my lunch break because I do stuff like that. The music playing in the background is from Space Monk's album, Quadrants. I will include details in the show notes. On that note, let's set the tone in Space Monk's words. This is the man behind the Space Monk of Funk, broadcasting live to the space around your face, vibrating the particles around your ears. Feel this rhythmic in your limbic. Free your mind and your ass will follow. Let's start the show. Dope Science Show.
I'm so glad that I have your time to talk about your new album and find out more about who and what you do. Can you introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Yared Yonas. I'm a musician, producer, singer-songwriter, go by Space Monk.
Space Monk. That's an awesome name. Where did you get the name from, or what's the story behind that?
You know, it was one of those things where I understood it after it came. I was just on the phone with a creative partner, a good friend. We have a project coming out soon, Fat Ron. And the name just came to mind because I was already thinking about another name. Space Monk, I just said it, and that's what it was. And then as time progressed and as I started experiencing life more, just the qualities, I started digging more into space, which is something that I've always found fascinating. But kind of being more intentional with my research and my studies and kind of monking off by means of just, you know, finding the virtues of being by yourself and just, I don't know, discovering.
Well, it's funny you say that, the virtue of being by yourself, because that's something, I'm an introvert, and I always tell people that now that I realize it, but I find that being by yourself is where you find that quietness so that you can actually, reach your true self. So does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. Continue, what were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just thinking, people are afraid of solitude.
Yeah. One thing that I found is that if you can, cultivating that or discovering self in solitude when you're comfortable and you're relaxed and all that stuff is how you take that out into the world. Because for myself, I've always been, an introverted extrovert. Where I have times where I'm really confident, really cool. But there's other times where it's I don't know what to do with my hand. The more time that I'm cool with myself, by myself, not needing anyone else, not necessarily not needing anyone else, but if I'm by myself, not needing anything greater than myself to be satisfied. So being able to take that out, that's helped me take that out into the world to where now I can go on a stage and not go through an anxiety attack beforehand,
Oh, dang, you mastered that. I'm still working on that.
I wouldn't say master. Remember when George Bush got on the aircraft carrier and said mission accomplished? I'm not about to say that. But definitely positive steps.
You've made progress.
Progress.
We can say that. Absolutely. Definitely. I want to go back to you just sharing a little bit more about who you are. You said you're a musician. Can you give us just a little bit more background information as far as any projects you're working on? Wait, let me tell you the things I'd like to share. Projects you're working on, who influenced you musically, and just anything as far as that you'd want to share about your creative process. So you can pick where you
want to
start.
For sure. I'm going to start with influences. It's over the past year, I've always listened to music, 70s for the most part, but recently, over the past year, I've been really digging out into like Funkadelic, deeper into Curtis Mayfield. One thing that's been more interesting though as of late is all of my influences that I've been rediscovering, almost as if they were new. I'm realizing that a lot, Stevie Wonder especially, and Michael Jackson, but Stevie Wonder right now, he's been someone I've been listening to all my life that I forgot until recently. I'm going through a song and I know all his lyrics and I'm knowing all these, I've been listening to all my life, yelling at the top of my lungs, not really. It's quite, I haven't been able to, I wouldn't even say it. I've been singing all of my life, just belting everything. But I've been told I sucked at singing all my life as well. It's not until I was 22. That's what I've been told. People told me to stop. Everyone, family, aww, friends, everyone told me to stop. I'm not gonna, because it was it was a kid that was just really going for it and not really hitting all these notes. So I'm not there's no judgment. There's no bitterness, because it's the kid is yelling, or what seems to be yelling, people are gonna tell him to stop. But I kept it pushing, and then I think 3 years ago, I I kind of saw that there was something there all my life, and I decided to just tap into it and keep it and go from there. And yeah, over the past few years, I've been just my voice.
That's really cool that you went from that. Most people, if they're discouraged, that actually, you know, that discouragement really deters them from pursuing, you know, that element of themselves. When you said that, it reminded me of when I was a kid. Like, I was into singing and dancing, and I'll never forget, like, we were watching Star Search. Do you remember that show?
Not quite.
Cool. See, I'm old.
No, not even. I missed so many references. You just don't know with me. I just miss a lot of references, though.
Okay, maybe. Okay, we'll go with that. I'm not old. Everyone else knows. So, Star Search was like American Idol, but without the backstory. You know, you would just see the contestants come out, and you'd root for them, and there's judges who would pick the winner, but it wasn't like the reality star version that we see now, where you find out who that person is. Okay? But everyone who was anyone was like on that show, and they became real stars. Like, yeah, and I remember watching it as a kid and being like, one day I'm gonna go on this show. And my dad was like, okay, all right, what's your talent? And I was like, I can sing. And I was like, singing. And I remember he was like, you stick to dancing?
Hey,
not really the singing. And I think I was like 4 or something. And if my dad listens to this, sorry, that's the truth. I'm not holding a grudge. I'm just saying that it deterred me. And yeah. I stopped singing. And I don't sing now. I'm always like, oh, I don't know how to sing. But I've learned through my daughter. I'm sorry, I'm on a tangent. I'm almost done. I learned through my daughter that, and you probably discovered this, that your voice is an instrument, so you just have to find out how to use it, how it works for you. You don't need to hit every note exactly as someone else hit it. You find your harmony, and that's your singing voice. And so anyone can sing if they can find, like, that key, you know, that works for them.
We're all birds that forgot we could sing for the most part, or at least a lot of us forgot we could sing.
Exactly. So that's cool to hear that you were like, nah, I'm going to keep singing. Because I listened to your music, and you were hitting all the notes. You said go ahead.
No, what were you saying?
I was going to say, you said that you miss a lot of references. Is that because you didn't watch TV growing up? Like, where are you from?
I grew up in Redlands, California, Inland Empire.
What?
Yeah, Redlands, California. First generation Ethiopian. So that mixed together all made it so that I miss a lot of references.
So living in Redlands and being, did you say Ethiopian?
Yep, first generation Ethiopian. So, yeah, so, I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff that I did watch. But it's funny because this always comes up with my friends, like specifically my creative partner, the roommates, Rich and Richard Stevenson, videographer, and Fat Ron, a rapper and singer. Every time they stop, no, they still get shocked when I miss like key references. Like, let's say, man, it's funny. I can't even say because if I had seen them, then I guess
you don't know
exactly. It comes up off. But I've come to terms with it. That's the best part of it. I used to feel like I was lacking.
Yeah.
But then now it's just like, no, I didn't see that. Now I smile. Not out of ignorance, pride in it, but it's like, that just is what it is.
Yeah, I am totally the same way. I grew up in San Bernardino, and we would go to Redlands, too. So I'm from the IE, so I totally get what you're saying. And so I remember, and I grew up 70 Adventist, so I wasn't allowed to watch TV. I'm missing like a big gap, you know, in television as well. And I used to feel lacking, especially didn't feel black enough when there were, you know, talk about things that I never heard. But now it's like, I smile just like you. I'm like, all right, I never heard of it. And it's all right. Tell me about it, you know.
But I've seen my stuff. Like, have you seen Chef in Africa, right? I've seen my things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Definitely. So what current projects are you working on now? What would you want to share with people so they know what's going on with you?
So right now I'm working on releasing a 4-5 track EP, songs that I've been working on over the past year that I'm, you know, it's almost like I'm going to the tree and picking fruit and putting it into this project. So stuff that like I definitely thought I finished, and then maybe months would pass and it would be unfinished. And more interesting than that is I'd be writing these songs and it almost took for me to have to live the lyrics or to live what I wrote for me to understand it, and then for me to add a new energy into it. So working on that, and by working it's in the mixing and mastering process. That, and I have a project with rapper singer Fat Ron that I've produced on some electronic spaceship hotboxing music. That's how I classify it. If you're traveling through different dimensions.
Oh, sweet. I like that.
That's what it would be. So Voyage Age Ultra. So Voyage Age Ultra and the project I'm working on. It's funny, I have like three names, so it won't have a name until it's out.
Okay. Yeah. But you're still figuring it out.
Hey, you know, I'm letting it come to me.
Yeah. Definitely. So you mentioned like traveling through space. I noticed a lot of the music that I've listened to on your SoundCloud, because I just listened to all of it this morning. I was you talked a lot about space and interdimensional things and just using it as, you know, a metaphor for emotions and things like that. It reminded me of Interstellar. Did you see that movie?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I forget. Oh, yeah. So they travel through different dimensions and their connection ends up being love that passes through all the dimensions. So for me, that story is not just sci-fi, but it's like a love story. That's how I describe it. It's just interstellar. But yeah, your music reminds me of that, you know?
Yeah, no, I like, I think the song in particular, Infinite Summer, before I wrote it, I was watching TED Talks documentaries on like quantum mechanics and physics and particle physics and stuff like that. Then I just went on to the writing process almost organically, and just stuff just naturally seeped in. Space is fun because at first, like, I saw space as something that was outside of Earth and just like the beyond. And then it's like, mm-hmm. Wait a minute, space is here. Space is literally everything. Like, space just really like emptiness, right? Or nothing there. There is so much unoccupiedness everywhere that it's everywhere is space. We live in space. We are traveling through space. Walking, we're traveling through space. Everything is space. Space isn't something that's separated between us and the atmosphere. This is space. We're like, don't get it twisted. Everything is space. Ourselves included. We come from stars. Everything about it. Nothing new under the sun. All the same building blocks make up the tree and make up my heart and my face. There's right? No separation.
Yeah. There really isn't. We're all energy at different levels, you know?
Yeah.
And so on certain realms, you know, we appear to be solid. And then at certain other, the higher energy levels, you know, we're more fluid and energetic. Wait, did I say that right? I don't remember. But I asked you, I said, what's your favorite science subject? And you're like, quantum mechanics. And I'm into that too, but it's all very murky for me, but not in a discouraging way, more like I'm still figuring it out, just like everyone else, you know, it's a big mystery. Like, we all have an idea of it, but go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, like, nobody understands it. That's the beautiful part.
Yeah. Exactly. And you're talking about space. And so I was like, let me look up some quantum mechanics articles to see if I can talk about anything interesting when I have your time.
Yeah.
And I was, what I found just doing a quick study is just a lot of quantum mechanics, you know, relates to Einstein's theory of relativity. You know, either they're trying to prove that it's correct or disprove it. You know, either way, the search for the truth and about that. And one of the things that I could talk about intelligently a little bit is the study of empty space. You know, we're saying space is everywhere, and they're finding that, you know, in 1998, scientists discovered that, you know, the universe is expanding, right? Mm-hmm. And everything we see is in relation to this expansion. And with that, they're trying to figure out everything they can about it. And one of the things they found that's most useful is actually studying what we consider empty space, which is really just dark matter, you know? Mm-hmm. And looking for the light and looking for any, you know, disturbance in that space. And that's where they'll be able to find out more information about our universe from these dark spaces. And it's funny that, you know, where there's galaxies and stars and things like that, there's so much activity that it's hard for us to observe or measure anything that we can see that shows like a clue of how we got where we are, only because there's just so much to explore when there's lights in there. I don't know. They described it as, you know, you can just find out, you can discover something much better when basically there's that calmness. So that's why they go to black holes in order to figure out why the universe is expanding and where we started from. And it's funny because you're like, oh yeah, everything's space, you know? It's like, yes, everything's space. And what we don't see doesn't mean it doesn't exist, you know? And
what
I'm kind of...
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what we don't see is the only thing that does exist.
Right? And what do you think about religion and science? Do you think you can have a belief in God or some sort of that type of concept and believe in science, or do you think can they coexist?
Oh, absolutely. I think if we were to go deeper, I would say that we should investigate the definition of religion first. But if just, mm-hmm. but I won't go deeper. But just at like a point blank analysis would suggest that God is science is really good at describing what is, what exists, mm-hmm. or observing, but it does right. nothing to tell you why. It does absolutely nothing to tell you why. And I won't say religion, but a lot of spiritual traditions rooted in, rooted in the self, we'll say, or discovering the self and the, losing my train of thought. Well, a lot of spiritual traditions say a lot of the stuff that physics has been saying, and also coming to, like, something really interesting, the Dogon tribe in, I think Mali, or we'll just say West Africa, they knew of three stars. So I'm gonna paraphrase this. There's a star, the Sirius star, which is actually a cluster of three stars that are really close together, and science wasn't able to see that those three stars until the 70s, but the Dogon tribe knew that there was three stars and had their origin story or their creation myth said that there mm-hmm. was three stars, and they had a story for which one is older and which one was younger. And then science in the 1970s confirmed that the size and a relative age. No, it was the size and that the fact that there was three stars. Long story short, the Dogon knew about these stars, and science wasn't able to till they had these microscopes, right?
Right.
So a lot of stuff that science is saying isn't necessarily new, especially the concept of nothing. Like, our minds are almost built just out of survival to emphasize what we see over what we do not see.
That's but we true. Find otherwise that, you're schizo, right?
Yeah, something like that. to emphasize the lion or the space around the lion, because mm-hmm. both of them equally exist, but we emphasize the lion for survival, I guess. or things of that nature. But what actually, if there was not nothing, if nothing was not there, then there would not be something. So for all the something to exist, all the yous, all the me's, all the trees, all the bees, there has to be nothing for it to sit on top of. And now it's, for so long, the point of science was to, physics is the discovery of the physical world, that which you can touch, smell, see, the physical world, the material world.
Like, but now it's classic physics.
Classical physics, yeah, and you can go so deep and you can go so much closer, you can make things so much bigger, but at the end of the day, what you see, as science is discussing, is what, 1%, 4% of the universe, of the known universe? And 94%, 96% of it is energy? That we can't see light
that's
interact with it? So the vast majority of everything is that which is unmanifested. And spiritual traditions have been saying this for thousands of years. The Buddha was talking this since, what, 5,000 BC, right? Or 500 BC, something like that. But BC, no less. Don't get it twisted.
But, you know, and that was interesting. And I always see, like, the more I learn about science, the more I feel like we're just explaining what, like you said, what already exists. We're not creating new things. We're finding out how things work, you know, but we're finding it, say, at a deeper or more minute level, better able to describe it. And once you can describe it, then you can manipulate it into a tool. And that's pretty much how science works, or Western science. But I'm glad that you brought up the Dogons, because I read about them too, and they, their whole culture and their art and their ceremonies all revolve around, you know, the galaxy that they somehow observed with no, you know, modern technology that we know of, and, you know, all these things existed. And it's funny, because some people often say science didn't exist until the Greeks came around and called it science. And I'm like, are you serious? Like, when people tell me that, I'm just like, I understand. Like, you know, what we consider science and what are most of the scientists that are renowned are, you know, they did stem from the Greek description of Western science. But that doesn't mean the science didn't exist. It just wasn't in maybe this tone, you know, it's just different. It's not culturally the same, you know. For some people, like you're saying, their spirituality was science. You know, they were still experimenting in order to be able to figure out, you know, how they can use the what was around them as a tool. They were still exploring, you know, their different levels of what the universe was. And they used, their emphasis was is more spiritual explanation of our universe versus, say, a mechanical what you can observe with your eyes, you know?
Yeah. It seems
I just wanted to say that because that annoys me that people think that, like, science itself, like the concept of science itself didn't arrive until, you know, Western worlds, or what we call Western worlds now, called it science. You know, like the Mayans weren't doing anything, like the Asians, you know, all these people around the world, like, weren't trying, you know, they weren't cultivating. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, the Greeks were really good at writing it down. And also, and I'm not even going to say it one-sided like that, because they made a lot of great discoveries. But the Greeks were heavily influenced by the Egyptians. And again, that's not to discount the advancements of the Greeks.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But, yeah. And there seemed to have been, I think what you're saying, like this this unity between science and science. And I guess we'll say spirituality, but, like, I almost don't want to say spirituality because that's the word feels like it's becoming a lot
doesn't
of things.
It's so
the
vague.
The words never describe a thing ever. That's one thing. The words never describe a thing. The words never describe the thing. The words can never be the thing that we're describing. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Like we're saying, a lot of what, just like with everything we're talking about with space, a lot of what's unsaid or unseen is actually the majority of what the meaning is.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. So, I love to ramble, and I'm like, well, that was fun. what else did I wanted to ask you? You seem, I love the funk. I really like that a lot. I think it's like, there's not to say that you're on a trend, but there is a renaissance of funk music happening right now. And I really like it. I'm like, yes. It's because it has energy.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. You know? It resonates. I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was almost time to like deeply rooted in unapologetic blackness, like in a funkadelic music video. I believe it was George Clinton. Like, I believe they were like all in some city streets on acid, like a big group of 9 or 10 of them shooting music video in the '70s, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, I don't know. It's just like so it's like we're coming into this time where we're leaving this, we're leaving the post racial America.
Yeah.
It's almost like the house of cards that was built on top of the work of the '70s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where commercialism, you know, there was this exalting energy that I believe existed in music within the '70s that seems to be reemerging in the ashes of the crumbles of the musical.
You're saying that you feel like the funk is coming back from the ashes of what was, you know, what we've been. I would say, the 2000s. I feel like we were like, okay, we had 2000, and now we're going into 2017. But we're like, you know what? Squash all that. We need to get into like funk. I feel like we've gone back maybe. I don't know, when was funk? The 70s? That's almost 40 years. Like, we're like, alright, let's go back there.
I feel like the ingredients that necessitated it more than like a concerted effort. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Our culture and our society is putting us in this place where that resonates again.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like, you know? I definitely feel that. And it's funny because my little brother was all into funk in 2000, and I remember being oh, okay. But I didn't take him up on his, he was like, you need to listen to this. I was like, all right. And I barely started listening to funk in the last couple of years, I would say. Yeah. And it's just great, you know? It's just awesome, and I really like what you're doing. And I like your image. I like that it's not hyper-masculine, not to say you're not masculine, but you have pictures of flowers in your hair and stuff.
Hey, you know?
You know, I like that.
When I was in third grade, I was picking flowers with my girlfriends, my female friends, women that were girls, right? And picking flowers so we can make bracelets for our moms. And then classmates whom I ended up becoming friends with later when I went into my hyper-masculine phase, probably because they took the flower bracelet and they broke it. And I cried to my teacher. But then the next year I was rolling with them and I was picking on this, and we were picking on kids, beating up one kid in particular. It's crazy how human influences will influence you to do things that are just beyond you, but it's flowers are tight. I'm coming back to them.
Awesome. Come on back. It's a freedom to be yourself, and if you want to wear flowers in your hair, that's good. I feel there's a hyper masculinity associated with men, with black men in particular, and men in particular, but especially black men and say Latinos, and that doesn't mean, and it's weird because there's the Hotep, you know, type, or they feel like black men are being feminized, you know, and then there's the other side where it's just black guys who I want to be free, and they're on a spectrum as far as what they consider masculine, and when people on the outside who are not black or whatnot, they often have, they think that black men are just so hard and so rough and so one dimensional. And so I like sharing stories and reaching out to people that I feel are just human beings, you like you and me, you know? And I'm like, yes, I like the flowers in your hair. Yes, I like that you're talking about something that's abstract, you know, because you're a black man and you're more than one dimension, you know, you're a human being. And I appreciate your time so I can share stories like yours.
Absolutely. It's one of the most liberating things is realizing that you don't have to care about what other people think.
Yeah.
So it's been as far as hyper-masculinity goes, it's really imprisoning because it's not even, you're not holding yourself up to what you believe. You're holding yourself up to this list of values and rules and precepts that you never agreed on. You were never asked whether you agreed on or how you felt about them, but you're expected to follow them.
Right.
So there's this person inside your mind that's constantly policing your masculinity. Yeah. And your sexuality, when at the end of the day, that person, you can turn that off. It's not you. It never was you. And it's just taking up space. You can't do dope shit when you got people in your head telling you things.
You sure can't. You know what? And you can't. And that's why I work very hard not to censor myself, because it leaks into the rest of my life, you know? Because then it's just there. It's you need to just listen to yourself so that you can create things. Yeah. And, so that's dope. I did want to say before you leave here, I did want to, if you can just give everyone, where they can find you, you know, your Instagram, your Twitter, your you know, whatever you want to promote, the name of your new album, just so it can be in this block here.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. So Space Monk Ultra You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, SoundCloud, Twitter. SoundCloud is where I'll be posting music regularly. Instagram, I'll be posting snippets, music, stuff that's really not out anywhere. So really, if you want to get the whole get down, follow me on Instagram. New project coming out, 12 ... sometime between now and the end of the year. Or we'll see what happens. The future isn't promised. The new project coming out soon.
That's awesome. And I always ask my guests to pick 3 songs that they want to be the soundtrack of their episode. So you got to give them to me now.
As by Stevie Wonder.
What's it called?
As, A-S.
By Stevie Wonder.
Yep.
Okay.
I Would Die For You by Prince.
Oh, I love that. Uh-huh.
And I Miss My Baby by Funkadelic.
Okay. I Miss My Baby. I just made that up. By Funkadelic. That's awesome. And then, oh, I have an airplane going by. I Will Wait.
All right.
Go ahead.
Airplane, be free.
Yep. Okay. And then I always use my guests as an intro for the next show. So if you could say your name, whether it's your stage name or your real name, and just let everyone know that you're on the Dope Science Show with Steph or Science Stuff with Steph, and you can just ad lib from there. So your name, you're on the Dope Science Show, and then you can ad lib.
Okay. Is it too late to change one of my songs?
Nope.
Can You Get to That by Funkadelic? That's the one I really wanted, but I couldn't think of the name.
What's it called?
Can You Get to That?
Can You Get to That?
Yeah.
By who?
Funkadelic. So change the, okay. The I Miss My Baby, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. And then, okay, so, okay, I got you, okay. Hello, this is Yara Yonas, a.k.a. Space Monk, and this is Science Stuff with Steph for all the science stuff that you ever wanted, all of it.
All right, try again. It's your name, and you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph.
Okay, you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph?
Yeah, so you'll say your name, and then you're on the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph.
With Science Stuff with Steph. Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. My name is Yara Yonas, a.k.a. Space Monk, and you are listening to the Dope Science Show with Science Stuff with Steph.
Ah! All right. Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time, and I can't wait to see more of what you put out creatively in all aspects. So I will definitely continue to stalk your Instagram and subscribe to your SoundCloud.
Thank you for having me, Steph. This was a beautiful and exalting experience.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Peace, peace.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Well, I hope you guys really enjoyed the show. I love those kind of conversations that just meander, and we talk about life and science and dope things and just chill vibes. So I hope you guys really enjoyed that. I want to go into this week's hot news or dope news item. I'm going to read an article that I found on sciencedaily.com. This article is called Scientists Create New Form of Matter. It's called a time crystal. The source, University of Texas at Austin. The summary, scientists are reporting on the creation of a phase of matter dubbed a time crystal, in which atoms move in a pattern that repeats in time rather than in space. Salt, snowflakes, and diamonds are all crystals, meaning their atoms are arranged in a 3D patterns that repeat. Today, scientists are reporting in the journal Nature on the creation of a phase of matter dubbed a time crystal, in which atoms move in a pattern that repeats in time rather than in space. The atoms in a time crystal never settle down into what's known as thermal equilibrium. Equilibrium is a neutral or equal state of being. A state in which they all have the same amount of heat. It is one of the first examples of a broad new class of matter called non-equilibrium phases that have been predicted but until now have remained out of reach. Like explorers stepping onto an uncharted continent, physicists are eager to explore this exotic new realm. This opens the door to a whole new world of non-equilibrium phases, says Andrew Potter, an assistant professor of physics at the University of Texas at Austin. We've taken these theoretical ideas that we've been poking around for the last couple of years and actually built it in the laboratory. Hopefully, this is just the first example of these, with many more to come, he says. Some of these non-equilibrium phases of matter may prove useful for storing or transferring information in quantum computers. Potter is part of the team led by researchers at the University of Maryland who successfully created the first time crystal from ions, or electrically charged atoms, of the element ytterbium. I'll have to put those in the notes. By applying just the right electrical field, the researchers levitated 10 of these ions above a surface like a magician's assistant. Next, they whacked the atoms with a laser pulse, causing them to flip head over heels. So imagine these little ions, or however you want to picture them in your mind, stars, glitter, crystals, just levitating and being whacked with pulses of laser lights that makes them flip around. Then they hit them again and again in a regular rhythm. That set up a pattern of flips that repeated in time. Crucially, Potter noted, the pattern of atom flips repeated only half as fast as the laser pulses. This would be like pounding on a bunch of piano keys twice a second and notes coming out only once a second. This weird quantum behavior was a signature that he and his colleagues predicted and helped confirm that the result was indeed a time crystal. The team also consists of researchers at the National University of Standards and Technology, the University of California, Berkeley, Harvard University, in addition to the University of Maryland and UT Austin. Frank Wilczek, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, was teaching a class about crystals in 2012 when he wondered whether a phase of matter could be created such that its atoms move in a pattern that repeats in time rather than in space. Potter and his colleague Norman Yao at UC Berkeley created a recipe for building such a time crystal and developed ways to confirm that. Once you have built such a crystal, it was in fact the real deal. That theoretical work was announced publicly last August, then published in January in the journal Physical Review Letters. A team led by Chris Monroe of the University of Maryland in College Park built a time crystal, and Potter and Yao helped confirm that it indeed had the properties they predicted. The team announced that breakthrough constructing a working time crystal last September, and it's publishing the full peer-reviewed description today, and at that time, that was March 8th, 2017. So if you have access to the Nature Journal, you can check it out. And what do you guys think? A time crystal. So, a new phase of matter. A time crystal. It's so interesting. And I have so much more background research I need to do to even understand what that means. But that's okay. This should spark some curiosity in you. You should go Google time crystal and space time and see what does this all mean. It's very interesting, and I really appreciate you guys' ears and your minds, and let me know what you think. Let's speculate. Let's Google. Let's go down a rabbit hole. Let's invite friends to talk about this. Maybe you know a physicist who can better explain this. If you do, hit me up. Have them teach me something. All right, you guys. I love you always. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great week. Peace.
issues time with love and kisses made a comeback sign. Insufficient funds. Loving days are done. A text you signed with the loving kiss, a later comeback shine. Insufficient fun, y'all get